and sees these paradoxes, but can still treat them. You know, Chinese medicine is based on nature in many ways. So in nature, heat rises. In nature, cold constricts. Wind makes things tremble and gets gnarled. And that's the same thing that happens in the body. So heat rises in the body, cold constricts. Wind gives us tremors. So Chinese medicine is really based on nature.
Your clinic is special in Vancouver for doing community acupuncture. Could you explain what community acupuncture means to you and where you first got the idea?
Yeah, so community acupuncture, I first found out about it actually in when I was in Victoria. One of my old classmates, or I guess he was a year behind me, he had started up a clinic called HEMA. And he had found out about this community acupuncture from Oregon. They're called working class acupuncture. So working class acupuncture is based out of Portland, Oregon, an amazing clinic that pioneered this whole movement. And Lisa Rodler and Skip Van Meter were the two people behind it. And it's really all about making acupuncture accessible financially for people and creating choice for people so that they actually can have the choice to use acupuncture, because generally speaking, acupuncture is based, you know, it's a one-on-one treatment with high costs. And I believe that people need to have it frequently in order to get better. So I wanted to create a model that allows for this. And so we have a sliding scale that makes treatments more accessible financially, and then people can come more often in order to get healthy faster. So when I heard about this community acupuncture movement, it was just like bells going off for me. It made so much sense, and I knew it was something that I wanted to do.
Do you employ any different methods or practices with community acupuncture as compared with regular acupuncture?
The thing about community acupuncture is, one, you have to make sure that everything you do makes sense in the model. So it's got to be something that you can do within 10 minutes, because you see people every 10 minutes, which is more than enough time to give a really effective treatment. I think the needles are what do most of the work, in all honesty. But everything that you do has to make sense in your practice. So what we use at POKE is a distal style of needling. So because we can't put, for example, needles in your back if you have back pain, we've had to learn methods to treat back pain without actually needling to the site of injury. And my teacher, Dr. Tan, also used to say, you know, there's no sense in spanking a crying baby. So he doesn't needle into pain anyway. So I really like that philosophy. It's made a lot of sense to me. So we do a lot of distal style needling. We also do a lot of Miriam Lee's magical 10 points. So she was a doctor that treated up to 80 people a day using the same treatment method with a set number of points. So we might add those as like a core treatment and then add extra points onto that, depending on what a person is coming in with. So we've modified our methods. Yeah.
What's the philosophy behind community acupuncture?
The philosophy is really to create affordable acupuncture for patients. So it's all about trying to make it more accessible and affordable for people. The other thing I'd like to mention, though, is along with the accessibility piece, something that I'd say even cherished about this model is that nobody heals in isolation. So there's a really beautiful thing that happens when you have a bunch of people healing in a room together. There's a bit of a collective energy that is created. And it's much like, for example, a yoga practice. You know, if you take doing yoga on your own in your house versus going to a class to take yoga, I feel like your practice can be strengthened by doing it in community. So I really love that component of the model.
How did you first get involved with POKA, or People's Organization of Community Acupuncture?
Well, when I heard about the community acupuncture movement, I basically devoured anything I could get my hands on that had to do with community acupuncture. And at the time, there was something called CAN, which is Community Acupuncture Network. And so I signed up with them, and it was a huge resource for people who wanted to learn about community acupuncture. And since then, CAN has become POKA, which is the People's Organization of Community Acupuncture. And that's a co-op, and that is basically an extension, that's what CAN has developed into. So once I learned that they existed, I became a member and follow much of what they do.
How well organized is POKA as an organization?
POKA is phenomenal. It's a sociocracy, so, you know, it uses a form of, like, collective decision-making. It's very, it's a really neat organization. They've got a whole bunch of different sub-organizations within it, so people are in charge. It's volunteer-run, and very supportive, and it actually has helped generate a whole movement that has put together Poca Tech, which is the first community acupuncture style school in the United States, which is phenomenal because it's making acupuncture more affordable as a student, because acupuncture is actually like prohibitively expensive, and then the amount of student loans that you can come out with after studying acupuncture is ridiculous. And so they have created this model, which is mainly volunteer run as well, with teachers and members who are trying to make this happen. And the fees for study are far lower than they would be in a private school. So it's pretty amazing what they're doing.
Community acupuncture clinics are more commonly found in the States. Did you face any problems establishing this model of acupuncture in Canada?
I didn't face anything that a clinic in the States might have to face. I think in Vancouver, actually, it's particularly difficult zoning-wise, and as you're witnessing what's happening in the city with like the cost of living and the cost of rental space and commercial leasing space, I think that is something that's pretty challenging. Acupuncture is now deemed a medical service, so I had to be in a medically zoned area, and also parking is an issue because within a community acupuncture model, I'm seeing more people than just one-on-one, so I need to have more parking spaces. So that's the part that I found the most challenging, or I did at the time find really challenging, trying to fit my model into a box that was, you know, palatable to the city.
But there were no ideological criticisms or problems?
I haven't come up against anything ideologically like challenging, really, because I think, I mean, it's definitely a different situation in the United States with healthcare and, you know, people having to pay much more for their healthcare. Here in Canada, we're quite lucky in that sense. But I think more and more people are becoming familiar with acupuncture. It's becoming a more viable and acceptable form of treatment. So honestly, personally, it was an amazing experience setting up this clinic, you know, with a few small challenges on the side of zoning and having the faith that people are going to show up. But very quickly, I think the city took to the model, which has been neat.
What's the business model behind community acupuncture?
So it's kind of like a social enterprise, really. How would I explain it? It really is, it's a sound business model, because when you think about it, we charge $20 to $40 on a sliding scale with a $10 first-time patient fee, an admin fee. And so if I can see up to six people an hour, I'm making a similar amount as to what I could see for one patient an hour in a private practice. But the difference is that I've really opened up my patient base by lowering my costs, because I can appeal to a much larger population. So I think personally it makes much more sense than a private practice. And that's not to say that people can't be successful in a private practice, but I do think it's quite few and far between that people are able to have a very successful and profitable practice as a solo practitioner.
Given your positivity, do you feel that community acupuncture could be a dominant or even a prevailing model for doing acupuncture in the future?
Well, you know, I'm really biased. I absolutely think it can. It makes so much sense to me. It's not to say that there isn't a time and a place for a private practice. Some people may feel that that's what they need, and I don't want to judge that. But honestly, I think what I've witnessed and experience with the community acupuncture model, I really believe this is the way to go, because there's an affordability piece that just does not exist in a private practice, and it's really prohibitive for a lot of people. And I think health is all about empowerment. So if you feel empowered, you're more likely to be healthy. And if you don't have acupuncture as a choice for your health, that's not a very empowering feeling. So I'm a little bit more hardcore in my beliefs, in that I really believe this is the way to go.
What is the sustainability of community acupuncture, in your opinion?
I think it's got a sustainable future. I think the hardest part for new graduates coming out of school is it is not an easy world out there to build up your business and to find clients, especially when you're charging, you know, high prices for your trade. But with a community acupuncture model, within the first month at Polk, I was paying my rent. I was able to employ people at the second month. I was able to open up the schedule. So, you know, I'm very lucky. Vancouver is a thriving city. It's very busy. There's a huge population to draw on. But I believe this business model makes sense on all levels.
What do other TCM practitioners think of community acupuncture?
You know, I think there's a wide range of beliefs. I think people who understand what it's about are supportive, for sure. I think there is a misconception that all we do is treat stress or pain, and that really is not the case. I mean, I see all kinds of things walk through my door: skin conditions, mental health, digestive symptoms, respiratory issues, pregnancy, you know, pre, post, partum, absolutely everything. We've seen so many things. So it's not just stress and pain that we're helping.
Do you feel that community acupuncture could possibly be integrated with Western medicinal practices?
Yeah, it's interesting that you ask that. I've been thinking lately and talking to a couple of patients of mine about what it would look like to have more acupuncture in the hospitals, for example. I think it would be great. I think it's a very challenging and complicated situation because it's two totally different bodies that organize and oversee these two professions, so Western medicine versus Chinese medicine. I think there's a place for them. I believe that Western medicine is unbelievable and amazing for acute emergent care. I think Western medicine struggles a little bit more with the chronic issues and things that it can't quite resolve. I think acupuncture is amazing for chronic, you know, acute in some cases, but nothing emergent. It doesn't make sense for me to boil up a bunch of herbs to stop bleeding that has to be immediate, and you know, you need to go to a hospital for this. But I think for many other syndromes, acupuncture makes sense. So I would love to see the two collaborate a little bit more, but it's a difficult scenario to imagine where you might start with that.
How long has your clinic been open?
It's been open since 2009, of August. So I'm in my seventh year.
What made you want to start your own clinic?
I don't know. I think I always knew that I wanted to do something, to create something. I think I'm a creator and I like to dream, and I dream big. And it just made a lot of sense when I found this model. I had a vision and I felt like this is what I wanted to do. So there was just no stopping me in that regard. And I also think that I like working for myself. You know, that's a side of the business model that I start to appreciate more and more. I like being in charge of my schedule and my life, so to speak. And I also like working with other people, but starting my own clinic just seemed to really make sense for me.
Were there any difficulties you encountered in establishing your practice?
There definitely were. The zoning, as I spoke about before, was really challenging. It took me about a year to find my space. I had the keys to another space, but it ended up, it was on an upstairs floor, which I was, you know, really struggling with just for accessibility. But a big sort of fan went on in the space below, and my floor started shaking, and I thought, okay, this is not going to be a fit. So I again had to hit the pavement and see if there was anything else I could find. So yeah, the zoning, you know, above and beyond anything was a challenge. I think just keeping, you know, the faith that this was going to be successful. I had a couple of people in particular I like to think about that were, you know, a little bit more negative and just saying, what are you doing? This is crazy. Don't lower your fees. You have to charge high prices. And really keeping, you know, my beliefs strong while I was going through the whole process of finding the space. And when I found it, a bit of a demolition, my cousin was instrumental in helping me. He donated so much of his time to fix up what is now Poke. So that was, yeah, I was very lucky. I had a lot of good people around me supporting me.
What are the general reactions to your treatments?
Great, really. I mean, mostly we get a lot of lovely reactions. People's eyes, they go bug-eyed when we clear pain on the spot, because we do a method where we get, we ask for feedback right away quite often. And so people can feel that shift right off the bat.
How strict is regulations regarding your practice?
Well, in general, we've got a regulatory body called the CTCMA, and that protects the public. So it's not really an acupuncture association. It's more our regulatory body. And you have to be a practitioner you have to have a license, either as an acupuncturist or traditional Chinese medicine practitioner or a doctor of Chinese medicine, in order to practice legally.
How well established is Chinese medicine in Vancouver as a field and culture, in your opinion?
It's difficult because I don't have a lot to compare it to. I do feel that things are changing. As I said, I think people are becoming more familiar with it, more open to it. But again, this is my line of work, so I'm immersed in this. Occasionally we'll get people, actually I shouldn't even say occasionally, often we'll get people that are coming to us and it's their last resort. So obviously there's a lot of ground to make up in terms of putting us at the forefront of people's, you know, in people's minds as an option for care. But I think it's fairly established. How many schools now? There's two schools in Vancouver, a number of schools in Victoria, another one in Nelson, so quite a few in the province.
How well is the local traditional Chinese medicine community organized, do you feel?
I would say that is one of the downfalls and the downsides of Chinese medicine is that we don't really have a strong body that represents us. So there were two organizations initially that existed, then they merged to create another one. And there's just been a lot of complaints around this organization that I've been following on some of our networks. So, yeah, I wish there was a stronger united body. I think people tend to generally exist in their own practices. It can be quite isolated. Something I love about POKE is that we have a team there. And so we're working maybe not alongside of on a daily basis, but we're meeting every second week to collaborate and talk about our patients and cases. And I find that extremely supportive. So at POKE, I think it's pretty neat that way. I don't think that's the norm in the acupuncture world.
Do you feel that Vancouver has a strong TCM community?
I don't really know how to answer that question. I mean, I don't think there is a strong TCM community. You know, sort of what I was saying before is that there's no real body, what would I call it even, an organization that represents us as practitioners. And so I feel like that doesn't really unite us on a whole.
What changes have you seen in Vancouver's Chinese medicine community over the last 20 years? In terms of regulation, policies, practice, organization?
Well, Chinese medicine has been through quite a bit in BC in the last 20 years. So we've become regulated, and that's a big deal. So now all the schools have the same standard of education that is expected of them, and every student that comes out of these schools is expected to have certain hours, a certain number of hours and courses that they have done and completed. And then all of us go through a licensing, sort of a number of exams to get our licenses. So everything has been standardized, and that's one major change that has happened.
What do you think is the future of the Chinese medicine community in Vancouver?
Well, the optimist in me would say that there is a future, I think, because of community acupuncture models that are now starting to emerge, which I think are really going to support the population in terms of making acupuncture a viable choice for people. I think Vancouver in particular is at a very interesting time. As you probably are following with the real estate market, things are becoming, you know, a little more prohibitive for people to make a living here in the city. So it's tricky. I mean, as a practitioner, it's hard because you're facing a hike in rental fees, but you also want to make acupuncture more affordable for people, so you want to keep your prices low. So it'll be interesting to see what happens over the next, you know, number of years.
How open are Western doctors to working together with TCM practitioners?
I really think that varies, in all honesty. I think there's a number of doctors that refer to us, which is really great. And I think hopefully people do understand that there is a place for both. It doesn't have to be mutually exclusive. I think that, as I was saying before, Western medicine is, you know, so helpful in emergent care, for example, and other things, of course. But I think, some doctors are open to us for sure. And maybe that's changing as we become a little bit more mainstream.
How do you see Western medicine and Chinese medicine working together in the future?
It's hard to say. You know, I think it could exist much as it is now, both of them being totally separate entities and fully functional in what they're doing. But I think ideally, if we could see more of a collaboration, if we could get, you know, now there's acupuncturists that are able to go into hospitals if patients themselves request it, for example, in the pregnancy realm. So for delivery, there's a lot of acupuncturists that are now doing hospital visits to help with labor. I think there was a pain clinic as well that had acupuncturists in a hospital setting working with patients for pain. Also, in the addictions world, acupuncture is pretty well known to help. So I think my hope is that we could see this happen more and more often, and that acupuncturists would have hospital, I don't know what you would call it, hospital allowance or entitlement, or I'm not really sure what the words are for that, but I would like to see that happen.
Any last words you want to say?
I don't think so. Do you feel like we covered everything?
I think we did. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
That was an interview with Darcy Carroll, the proprietor of Polk Community Acupuncture Clinic. We talked about her involvement with community acupuncture, which is an innovative model of acupuncture based on the traditional community styles of treatment often practiced in Asia. Along the way, we looked at the sustainability and philosophy of community acupuncture, as well as its potential for growth here in Vancouver. For those who are interested, Polk Community Acupuncture Clinic is located on the intersection between Kingsway and Main on Broadway.
My name's Katie. You want some cool new music to listen to? Want to know about up-and-coming artists, albums, and more? Well, come hang out with me every Tuesday from 12 to 1. Raccoon City's where I'll be. Hope to see you there.
So what's your name and what are you doing here on campus?
My name is Sophia, and I'm on campus because I have class.
So my name's Marissa. I'm a fourth-year student at SFU studying English.
Morella, as in like my major. I'm a French major.
AJ, I'm studying CRIM.
My name is Alexis. Yeah, I'm just reading this newspaper I found. Yeah, I don't know.
Nav, I have class.
And do you know the SFSS?
No.
I know what the SFSS stands for, so it's Simon Fraser Student Society. Mm-hmm. Do I know about the upcoming election? Not really, except for when I get the emails, mm-hmm. Then I'll take a look at it. And I forgot what the other...
I've heard of it, yeah.
Yeah, I was actually interested in applying to volunteer, perhaps, but I was just looking into it a bit. So I just looked at the website and just scrolled through a bit, but nothing too much.
Do you know what like they do, and do you know if there's an upcoming election?
No, I think I got like an email about the election, but I didn't read it. Mm-hmm. So.
And that's an interesting question. I'd say between like a yes and a no. I mean, I do feel welcome enough. I guess I'll just leave it out there, actually.
Would you consider participating in the election?
Probably not.
Why?
I'm not very like participating as in like try to run or like
no
for voting.
Just executive officers, because they're electing new officers for the student body. So would you like consider participating to elect the officers that are like running?
Sure.
Okay.
Yeah.
Good.
I would, but I don't exactly know how to participate in it.
Probably not, because I don't know what they stand for. So.
Probably not, because I'm still adjusting here. Yeah.
I'm not sure, because I don't really know anything about it. So.
I haven't given it much thought, just because I have a heavier course load, and I know it requires a little bit more time. Mm-hmm. But I'll definitely look into it a little bit more.
Thank you. you can pull me in and we can relive our youth. Don't you know that is true?
I'm Dr. Anthony Lizowitz, and this is Climate Connections. To prepare for last year's World Cup in Qatar, the city of Doha built massive stadiums. Many migrant workers went there to find jobs in construction. But working outside in scorching temperatures put many in danger. Thousands died or became ill during the decade-long construction process.
If they're working outside, they're exposed to whatever the climate conditions might be like. And that can be really hazardous for human health.
That's Andrew Zimmer of Montana State University. He's using climate and demographic data to identify groups of people who are vulnerable to extreme heat in thousands of cities around the world. For example, the data reveals that Doha's population of working-age men has been rapidly expanding, which reflects a large population of migrant workers. In contrast, some Japanese cities are notable for their aging populations.
As you get older, you're more vulnerable to extreme heat. Your body is less able to cool you down, and there can be a risk of mortality if you're exposed to really high temperatures.
So it's urgent that these residents stay cool during heat waves. Zimmer is making his data available in an interactive map, so local planners and decision makers around the world can identify their most vulnerable residents and take steps to protect them. Climate Connections is produced by the Yale Center for Environmental Communication. To hear more stories like this, visit climateconnections.org.
Dear listeners, as you may have heard, Meta, which owns Instagram and Facebook, is blocking Canadian access to all content created by news providers, including this radio station, in response to the Online Broadcasting Act. Access to local news and information matters to everyone, and while radio stations use their airwaves to keep you informed, we also use social media to share local news, events, and initiatives, and even content about our upcoming programming. We need you to write your MP and convey your concerns. Learn more and find a letter template for your MP on our website. Thank you for your support.
Trolling college music so you don't have to. No loyalties, no orthodoxy. Keeping it real, dumb, and organic since 2019. Tune into Home of Burnaby Rock with John on Fridays from 6 to 8 p.m.
Hi, this is Jesse Brown, the host of Canada Land, Canada's only media criticism program. Every week I talk to some of the most interesting people in the country about some of the things that matter most. We talk about the news media, about comedy, film, music, and politics. And you can now listen on CJSF 90.1 FM every Monday at 5 p.m. Wait for it.